Welcome to Making Comics, a podcast exploring the comics process from two different perspectives. I'm Keith Foster. I write the comic Kadoja, and I have a blog on keithrfoster.com, and I talk about things like horror.
And I'm Scott Loss, the creator and artist of The Second Shift and Wanderers of Milsanda for The Accidental Aliens.
Yeah, man. So more time, another week, and more things. So if I do the intro, that means you set it off. So so what's your first thing of the week, man?
Well, the first thing of the week is the topic everyone wants to hear about, and that's mermaids, my friend. a pod, a gaggle, a death, a murder.
I was actually going to say America has demanded more mermaids. America has spoken, and they want mermaids. But this isn't just – people don't just listen to this in America, man. We have some people – you know, we got some listeners overseas. We've got listeners in Canada. We span at least three continents, I think. So worldwide, yeah.
And they have mermaids in all of those places. So, exactly. Yeah, they're just as interested.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I tackled another layout. He basically stated he liked the background. He liked the angle of that. And so luckily I do work on multiple layers. And I kept the background whole. And so wherever the characters were laying, I would cut those pieces out, but I wouldn't delete them. I just kept them on a separate layer. Turned out to be a smart thing because he didn't like the character position initially. So the second iteration on this second draft, so third draft overall, it was all right. I still feel like the second draft is definitely the strongest, but I sent it his way the other day, and you know, I was just like, hey, all right, well, let me know what you think about this one in comparison to the second one. So the hopes is, he goes, yeah, the second one's better. And then so that way I can just print that out in blue line, which is my typical method with him. I'll get the finalized approval, and I'll print that out in blue line, and then I'll ink traditionally, and we go from there. So if he wants colors, I'll now just enlist my colorist Joaquin to take over after that. So I'll scan that bad boy back in and get that rolling. So fingers crossed, he approves of this layout, and I can move on to other commissions that I have, unfortunately, piling up. But you know what they say: you want something done, give it to a busy man. So I'm happy to have the list behind me.
Yes. Okay, so I get to go to my first thing, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is, I actually didn't plan on talking about this thing, but I think this is a good opportunity to do it. So, and I think since we've both commissioned this person, I don't see there's anything wrong with giving out the person's name, because he does great work. For astute, hardcore listeners of this podcast, Scott mentioned a guy way early on. And again, I think we kept the names vague, but he was talking about a guy that draws in a Mike Mignola style. And that person's Instagram handle is Luke Parker. When I saw the art that he showed me, I was like, dude, that is incredible. So I then reached out to Luke Parker and asked if he was taking commissions. He was. And I am happy to say that over the course of the last like month and a half, we've gone from basic thing to finished Kadoja commission. It looks really cool. You know, Scott actually gave me some good, I just needed an artist opinion. What had happened was I got an initial drawing back, I think about a week ago, and the character drawings were nice. It's a composite of course, Kadoja, and then the three characters on the special weapon side that are the primary characters. So Cruz, Williams, and Yancey. And everything looked great, except Kadoja didn't look big enough. You know, it didn't represent something that's 200 feet tall. It represented something that could be like 30 feet tall. Like, you know, in kaiju movies, it felt more like Daimajin than Godzilla. And so I thought that was the case. I kicked that over to Scott. Scott totally agreed. It was basically either expand Kadoja or shrink the character heads and torsos. And so I gave him the choice. He expanded Kadoja. Kadoja fills up the page a lot more. It signifies that Kadoja is enormous. And after that, it got inked and colored, and I sent it to Scott, I think, earlier today. It looks fantastic. And what that's going to be is, that's going to probably be a incentive cover or the Kickstarter exclusive artist cover for what will be Kadoja number volume 4, number 1, way down the road. I got the the tip from you, you know, or I just picked it up from you, that you're starting to work ahead. You know, you got burned to some extent. You've been burned by some commission timing before, and the best way to get around commission timing is stack them way in advance. So I did that for the first issue of Kadoja, and we'll see what happens as I go forward.
Yeah, and like Keith said, he shot that my way earlier, and it looks fantastic. And man, the turnaround time was actually better than mine. So that was kind of cool. I think he was in the middle of something when he was working on mine, but you got yours very fast turnaround time. Very cool. And it looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. And so again, Luke Parker is super cool. And I think I want to turn this into a little bit of a commission thing, right? To talk to people out there. I think this is a little bit more geared to writers because, you know, yeah, I'm sure if you're an artist, Scott, I'm sure you may have commissioned somebody to do something at some point. And in fact, actually, I take that back. You totally commission people.
I am an artist, and I have.
Yeah.
In fact, I have commissioned Luke Parker.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So. No. What I was going to say, I was thinking for a second that by you being an artist, you commission less, but that's not true. Well, maybe by being an artist, you commission less, but by being a person who self-publishes a comic, you don't commission any less than anybody else. You're your own small comic company, and you're doing what everybody does, getting some cool artists to do covers for you. So, yeah, there's really no difference if you're putting out a comic, whether you're the artist or the writer.
Yeah, I actually have a bunch of commissions before. So while I was in the process of creating Second Shift number one, I actually was going out there and commissioning artists. I actually, back then, I didn't know that you couldn't just commission someone and then use that art for whatever you wanted. I didn't know there was like rules about it, and a couple of my friends clued me in. They're like, no, you got to let them know what you're using it for. Like, you have to get permission. I was like, really? But they're my character. He goes, yeah, but like some of them under contract and this and that. So it's something you got to clear with them first. So something I didn't know, but honestly, I don't regret going out and grabbing all of those commissions. One day I'll either post them online, or some of the artists have become. At the time, a couple were Marvel exclusive. I think one for sure is not anymore. And there's a couple that are kind of like, I think they just freelance more or less. They work for Marvel and DC, but they also do their own creator-owned work. So I have maybe 10 commissions of just random famous artists that have drawn my characters, and they're pretty awesome.
Nice. And so, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to getting the original, because that's one where I paid a little extra for the original, and it'll be here at some point, and I will put it on my wall at that point. I'll frame it up.
Yeah, he's pretty quick with the mailing, too. Yeah. I remember from the time he finished it, sent me the finished color piece, I swear the originals were in my doorstep. I think he's in the UK.
Yeah.
And it was on my doorstep within a week. So cool. I was like, wow, that is crazy fast turnaround.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I can't wait. So that'll be cool. But then I think to further that point a little bit, I think it's always a cool idea for people out there that are, you know, making their own comic. It's a great idea to get other people to do your stuff. You know, just to vary up the art style. I mean, everybody does it. You know, absolutely every company out there does it. Every, you know, creators do it. And it's just a great way to not only, I mean, you get a couple things out of it, right? One, you get a cool interpretation of your character that's yours, you know, where you get to walk, you know, go to bed that night or go to bed every night and say, hey, I got somebody to do this cool piece of art that's my character. How cool is that? So that's thing number one. Thing number two is, of course, in a Kickstarter world, in a self-publishing world, it's always great to have different covers. And the opportunity to commission a few extra covers out there is never a bad idea. And number three, which is a little bit more, big, I guess, is you get to support part of the scene you're in. You know, you get to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're making comics, you're supporting artists, you're hooking up artists, you're trying to find artists just like everybody else is. You know, my thing is always, I love trying to find artists that are up and coming. Sometimes when they're up and coming, they never quite hit. Sometimes they hit later. Sometimes they become megastars. You just never know. You know, so it's fun.
And something that I learned from Travis, and I just learned over time, honestly, it was a little bit of Travis, was a little bit of just, getting older and seeing how things work out. I've seen some artists on the scene who were looking for commission work. And I just, at the time, it was so long ago that I was like, well, they're not really famous enough. And it's just like, it was such a piss poor way to think about it. It's just like, do you like their art? Yeah, their art's awesome. okay, then why not get a commission of their work? You know, mm-hmm. like, why would you not have them do their rendition of your characters? So, you know, it's something, learn from my mistakes, and if you see someone badass out there and you enjoy their work, commission them, you know, get that piece early. Case in point, I saw Mahmoud Azrar, who works for Marvel primarily now. I think he's working on Conan the Barbarian right now. Mm. I saw his work on DeviantArt, and he was taking commissions openly. I'm like, this guy's fucking awesome. But he wasn't famous, so I never commissioned him. And guess what? Super famous now.
Yeah.
So I could have got him ground level before his prices were through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, or before he even, like, I don't know if he still takes commissions. I think he does. He's like, I think he's pretty quick. But yeah, you know, just learn from those mistakes. And if you see someone you like, go for it. And also, what I like to do specifically, I look for artists that are the complete opposite style of me. Like someone that is draws nowhere like me, because the work, you know, it's just, if I got a cover that it was someone that drew like me, it's just like half the time they might confuse it for my art, mm-hmm. you know? And then, so they're like, oh, this is a really cool cover. And then I have to go, no, I wasn't the one that drew that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel bad because they thought it was my work, but then also I feel bad because I can't claim it. It's just like, yeah, it is cool, but it's not mine.
Yeah. Actually, you brought up something that I imagine I am not the only writer. I imagine this happens to every writer who tends to be the face of their product, you know, because as long as Kadoja has been going, I've been, you know, the predominant convention face. Rory Smith, who did the art, obviously did some conventions. Lance Pilgrim, who has done a bunch of things, has been at conventions. But when it comes to convention attendance, I'm, you know, far and above the most frequent conventioneer. And when people see your shit at a convention, they always assume you're the artist, or often.
Yeah, when I met you, that's what we thought too.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, are you the artist on this book? You're like, no, I'm the writer. I'm like, oh, writers can be an artist alley.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm always an artist alley. So it was kind of like,
exactly.
I was like, oh, fucking A.
Exactly. Right, hey, on. Nobody ever told me no, so that was good enough for me, you know? but yeah, I mean, and a common thing I'll get a compliment like, oh yeah, man, this art's killer. And I always just say, yeah, Rory did a great job. You know, Alberto did a great job. Will did a great job, whoever it is, right? Lance did a great job. So, you know, I'm always going to give that credit and make it very clear that you are not talking to the artist. Because sometimes people come up and want me to sign it, you know, and I'll be okay, you know, I write it, so I'm happy to sign it. And then that way, I just give them a quick out in case they're like, oh, you're the writer.
Yeah. I think with the book, it's A-okay, though. You know what I mean?
With a book, it's fine. Yeah. Yeah, with a book,
yeah,
it's
for
fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, just a quick interlude here. So we usually talk about what we're drinking, and Keith was great enough to bring me a beer last time he was down, or maybe when I was at your place, like that you gave me this one.
Yeah.
Ain't No Hurry, and it's a sour wheat ale. Where is this? Oh, Weldworks Brewing Company. This is quite good, man. It's very sweet.
Yes.
So I'm kind of in the mood for this. So this is actually working out really well.
Yeah, it's a weird, it's a wild beer. You know, I bought two, I had one, and like I just kept looking at it in my fridge, and I was thinking like, I don't know if I'm ever going to want something this sweet for a while. So hook up Scott. I mean, you give me some beers, and why not return the favor? So we exchange beers sometimes. But yeah, man, it is basically like a beer-ish, you know, tall glass of sweet iced tea with some lemon in it. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Black tea, honey, ginger, lemon, and turbinado sugar.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then,
very
so
sweet. Are you drinking something today?
I'm drinking, but I'm not drinking anything you gave me this time. I'm drinking something called Deadly Combination, and it looks like it's by the Barrier Brewing Company in Oceanside, New York. So that's who's throwing this one down. And it is basically a New England style India Pale Ale brewed with lactose. So kapow.
Okay, hold that can up to the screen. I'm gonna take a screenshot. Bring it forward there. Bam. Oh wait, one
here,
more.
Hold on. Let me get the good hoppy face.
Oh yeah.
Oh hold on. Let me do something else. I can get a little bit of a shine on it. There you go.
Oh, there you go. All right. Bam. Okay,
there
cool. All right. I'll post that up on my my stories when this episode airs.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I'm not wearing a cool Dr. Doom t-shirt this time, and I don't have a cool can, so we just have these cans, and we'll rock with those. That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
Okay, man, so thing number two for you, man. What about you? What's your second thing?
So I finished up the PDF for Second Shift number one redo, the Redux, with the redo lettering, and so upgraded cover, credits page, and letters page, and back matter, but not really. It's kind of like, I did throw in one of my old sketches of the Second Shift, I think, so it was from 1996, and I created the Second Shift in 1992, I believe. So it's 4 years after the inception of them, and I couldn't find anything older, but I think it's in a box in my garage. So I kind of didn't have a lot to write because it's like, well, this is a reprint. Like, I don't need to ramble on like this was a new issue that we just created. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just thanked Ed and Joaquin for their, you know, long time service and being great partners. And hey, check out this old image that I drew. It's kind of wild. So yeah, just something fun to put in the back.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, super simple. This is kind of a light week for me. I've just been, you know, trying to dabble with commissions and other things. Like last night, I had a spot of insomnia. And honestly, it wasn't the standard insomnia. So I woke up at 4:30. I did have to go to the bathroom. Like, okay, actually, just legitimately have to go to the bathroom. I get up and I go, oh, yeah, I played basketball for the first time in a year and a half. And every single joint on my body hurt.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't go back to sleep because I was in too much pain.
Yes.
So I ended up coloring like a character sheet until about 6:30. I passed out for 30 minutes, then my alarm went off.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was like my stacked up two, just a kind of couple minor things.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
Yeah, so for me what's interesting is that I have had a jammed up week, and the reason is because I'm traveling. I'm going on a 9-day trip. It is my kid's big annual tournament. The tournament is in my old stomping grounds, Philadelphia, where had the Sixers not fucked this up, they'd be playing in the finals when I was there. But the world can't be perfect. There's a whole lot of work that I have been doing this week to account for the fact that next week I'm not going to be doing it. And so for comics, you know, the great news about the time I'm going to be away, and obviously by the time this episode airs, I will have already been back and done the laundry and probably folded it and put it away. But as of right now, the nice thing about this trip is going to be, it is like all writing and reading because I'm traveling. So all I'm bringing is reading material and my laptop. So the writing is going to be there, anything I can do. And it's not just going to all be like novel stuff. It's going to be Kadoja stuff too, because it's time for me to start thinking about volume 4. Again, I suspended that about a month ago to really push through on the trade preparation for volume 3, because I need to get to that. What that means is I'm kind of scrambling my brain for every single thing I can possibly do that requires me to be in this room or on my home computer, where I have things like Photoshop, you know, and the audio editing and stuff like that, where I'm going to be doing that here instead of either doing it poorly on the road or not doing it at all on the road. And so as a result, I have been jamming up. I mean, I've said this the last couple weeks in various stages. What I just did before we started recording is I assembled the preliminary draft of the PDF. So the PDF is basically completely assembled. I decided for the moment to kind of cut that bonus material. It's not visually appealing, so I may put it somewhere, but I think it might be better as like an extra for the site or something like that instead of putting some pages on it. So we'll see how that goes. And I've always been a fan of like having stuff out there for people that really want to dig in, and I think putting them up on the website would be pretty cool. So I think I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
But in terms of the PDF, I have assembled it. But the assembly took some time too, right? Because to work backward, the things that I wanted to do tonight before we recorded were the last order of business I had to do was the thank yous page for the people on Kickstarter. So whether people are getting the finished the trade paperback in their local comic shop or whether they're getting the Kickstarter version of the trade, the interior is the same. There's going to be a thank you page and people's names are going to be on that. So, you know, I think it'll be cool, you know, in any version. I have all the names, so I assembled all those. I dropped them into the file. I spaced them out. They look good. Put the big thank you at the top. So I have a nice dedicated page for it at the end of the book. I think I may have put the Kadoja logo at the bottom. I think I did. And you know, that's pretty much it, although there's so many nuances to that. Because I realized when I was going through this stuff that there's a font set that we use for the Kadoja books. And I had used placeholder fonts on a couple of the pages. So luckily, Lance, I knew the first one. I knew the first font set we used, but the second font set eluded me. And so Lance had actually sent me a screenshot of not only the font, but all of his settings that he put in, which are very, very customizable settings that you can use in Photoshop under like the advanced section of the font itself. It's like the space between letters, the vertical spacing, yeah, all of that stuff, right? So I copied all those settings and then I dropped all that in. So the names are in basically the same font as what people see on the cover. So again, there's a couple fonts that we use, but I wanted to be consistent with one of the two. And then what I realized as I was assembling the PDF is, oh shit, I had these chapter separators. And those were in a font that was neither of them because I had just used a placeholder at the time. So I had to go back and change those. I had to do that. Then I assembled the PDF. I saw that I had put a few things out of order. So I assembled it again. You know, every time you assemble it, it's going to take like 5 minutes just for the computer to kind of whiz through it and do all that stuff. So the good news is I have a preliminary version of the PDF in front of me. I have one more problem to solve, but I have a week and a half to solve it. And then on the other end of that, I was struggling a little bit with the covers because I'm sure I can learn it for next time, but kind of like with my audio, you know, I never quite get around to hacking how to fix my audio until it's 15 minutes to recording time. So I give myself a grand 2 minutes of troubleshooting and then I'm like, ah, fuck it. Just use the microphone you used last week. Right. And that's kind of what I've dug myself into with these trade covers. I could have addressed it earlier, but I didn't. Luckily, Lance is going to come to the rescue and Lance is going to assemble those covers for me. So and I gave him a date of like by the time I get back, basically from the trip. So by the time I get back, I should have the covers. I can take one day, maybe two, to fix all the errors or whatever things I have in the PDF, because this is just one for me to proofread. Maybe I'll see something that's off. Maybe a little bit of like alignment's off. Maybe I didn't quite like the way I centered the words in a word balloon, you know, all those things. So I'm just going to take a red pen to those things and make those notes while I'm away. And by the time I come back, I'll have a short list of fixes to do. And then I expect to have the PDF, you know, complete probably even before this episode airs. So we'll see, or right around when this episode airs. And that still gives me plenty of time to place the order, you know, get all that stuff, which will get the books to Diamond in plenty of time and get the books to me so I can start sending them out to Kickstarter backers. So moving on through.
Right on, man. Yeah, I just realized I actually have one more thing. Ed sent me the script or a loose draft of Wanderers of Melisandre 3. So we're moving on to the next book. I do still have to print out the cover. Unfortunately, I had an inker lined up for the cover of Second Shift 10, and I was really looking forward to it. He's a very accomplished inker. I've used him before on some things, so I'm kind of bummed that he canceled on me. Unfortunately, he had the cover for like 5 months and just kind of kept pushing it back, and it was okay because I was still drawing it. Mm-hmm. And nice enough guy, but just was like, I can't catch up to the deadlines. I can't do it. But he kind of told me that the last time. And he goes, if you give me another 2 months, I can do it. I said, well, I'm not done drawing it yet. So keep at it, you know, fit it in. And yeah, the 2 months go by and I'm finished. And he goes, hey, I can't do it. So I'm going to ink the cover myself because I do like to have the covers in a physical form just in case. You know, if and when the book takes off, I'll always have the covers there to sell. and it's always nice to have tangible art. So once that's done, I'm going to start tackling the interior pages of Wanderers of Melisandre 3. But so far, so good on that loose draft that Ed gave me. It's like the way we work on Wanderers is a little more loose, using that word a lot, than Second Shift. Second Shift, Ed is more of a tight script. And Wanderers, because I like to do the dialogue, he just kind of gives me direction. You know, like, oh, page one, these are the events that happen. You know, page two, these are the events. Mm-hmm. So, I think he breaks it down into the four panels that I like for Wanderers. I like to keep it kind of like storyboard format for whatever reason. It proposes a different challenge than a standard comic book page. So, this is something I wanted to talk about. Direction in comic book pages. So like when you're creating your pages, there's a certain flow that pages should have that directs your eye. And this is a quote-unquote rule, but it's obviously like by artist choice, however you want to do it. But there should be a flow to your page. It should be directional in a way. When I do the widescreen format on the panels for Wanderers, it proposes a different challenge. It's like, how do I make this look different? How do I make it not look boring? Because the panel itself is the same size. So it's about moving the camera around in different and interesting angles as much as possible. Some good close-ups, some good distance shots, try to get some scale in there. So so far so good on that script. And it looks really good. Ed's just, we're just so in tune. Like, he just, you know, like, I give him a little bit of ideas of how I want the issue to play out, and he's off and running. And it seems like he just nails it almost every time, like, by the first try. First or second try. It's just like, yeah, this is good. I dig this. Let's go.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. So, just as a refresher, the standard direction in a panel is top left to bottom right, correct? Like, left across the top. Basically, like you're reading a book. That's what it is.
Right. There are other elements to it, though. Like, for instance, your first panel, you don't want to have characters necessarily looking off to the left. Because what that happens is it makes the reader kind of stop in that panel and kind of keep their attention there because their eye wants to look left, but it's the first panel.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have characters looking off to the right, it naturally moves them to the next panel.
Okay.
And sometimes you can do placements, so like background elements or characters' hand positions. You can direct it. So now moving over to the top right panel, in that panel, you might want to have a character's hand kind of angled towards the bottom left or middle left, or maybe background elements kind of point middle left. So those are directional devices that an artist can use when constructing their page.
Hmm.
And it helps create a flow that isn't so obvious to the reader, but when you're an artist, you can see it.
Nice.
So like when we were watching Planet of the Apes, I was like pointing stuff out to you, like the way they were framing certain things. And then to the opposite side of it, I was like, wow, they're not trying to frame anything. Like they're just fucking going for it. And mm-hmm. so that's like a different style, you know? And so there's an appeal to that as well.
Yeah, man. Okay. No, that's cool. That's cool. I honestly never paid attention to that. So now that's something that I'll check out a little bit. I mean, you've opened my eyes to some artistic things and they only continue to increase, right? So yeah, man, I think that's really cool. That's really cool. Was that your third thing? Is that what?
Yeah, that was my last one. That was my third.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't have a third thing. So.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I'm good. So why don't we get into something that we want to try to make a point of every episode, which is just to put something in there that's indie creator specific that we can talk about. We may or may not have touched on it before, but we want to kind of take things as much as we can, hopefully every week, and just break them down to some basics. Because they're like, so here's what we're going to talk about this episode. We're going to talk about finding a printer. Because we've talked about printers a lot. But what we've never really talked about is walking all the way back to square one and saying, how do you find a printer? Let's say you're somebody out there that's ready to print your first book. What the hell do you do? Right? So this is, you know, we're going to kind of implement this for now and keep on going and keep on thinking of things to talk about, and hopefully it helps. So we are going to talk about finding a printer. So you have a book and you want to print it. What do you do? When I printed my first book, I was the first issue of Kadoja. I was almost exactly in this spot. The couple options that you can really go here are, I'm just going to break it down into very easy groups. First group is big printers. Okay, so there are some big printers out there. The one that I used for Kadoja Volume 1, Number 1, the indie version, is a company called, I think, Heidel Print. H-E-I-D-E-L Print. I believe they're out of Korea. And the great thing, and the other printer that I would loop in here is Print Ninja. Print Ninja.
Yeah, I was going to mention that
one. Yeah, is another one. And what really makes these guys sing, I guess, is the fact that their books are high quality. You know, the way that print nerds will tend to judge books is when you turn it over and look at it from the side, how tight is it? Does it kind of bow up and puff up on the side, or does it stay tight? And we're going to talk about all these things, right? But it's important to know that when you want the higher quality stuff, quote unquote, the one that print nerds supposedly like, which, you know, print nerds are print nerds. That doesn't mean they're right. I mean, beer nerds like fruited sours right now. I think they're wrong. So, you know.
Yeah, sours suck.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a big fan of sours. But print nerds, you know, it's always about kind of like that tightness to the spine and on the side, how it doesn't bow out. So the upside is you get really high quality product. The downside is you got pretty damn high minimums. You know, when it comes to Print Ninja, when it comes to places like Heidel Print, you can find these kind of places everywhere. You're going to have to run at least 500 books, sometimes at least 1,000 books. And sometimes that's really hard to commit to, man. You know, we're talking about running, you know, if this is a brand new book of yours, we're talking about 1,000 copies at something on the order of maybe half your cover price, maybe less. Well, you know, like, let's just go with like between $1.50 and $2 per comic, right? So you're running $1,500, $2,000 if you have to print up 1,000 of those, plus shipping. And I just mentioned some of these places are overseas. So it can add up pretty quick. Which leads us to the second option. And that is lower cost printers. And printers that are accessible and that can print one damn copy of your comic if that's what you really want. And to me, the industry standard in that is a company called Kablam. In terms of first getting a comic published, so for me, issue one, I went through Lance and got the Heidel print and did all this stuff. And, you know, issue ones are issue ones. They're great. They're sitting on a lot of people's shelves right now because people want the number one of anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, that was something I was going to say is if it is your very first issue and you believe in this book and you have every intention of doing multiple issues of this, it's not going to be just the single issue. You will sell that book. If the art is good looking enough, on the indie end of it, if the art is quality, you'll be able to sell that book because everyone, to Keith's point, wants a number one.
Yeah.
So, but issue 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, don't do 500 copies. Don't do 1,000 copies of those. Those are not the issues that you want those high numbers in.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, speaking for people that have done conventions for a while, and obviously we're not hardened seasonal vets or anything, but we've been in the game for, you know, 7 years now going on.
7 years, yeah.
Yeah, and people are always going to want, somebody somewhere is going to come by with their kid, or somebody just wants to dip their toe in the water, and they're going to ask what's a good place to start. The best place to start is always issue one. So issue one, you print up a bunch of those, they will sell through your lifetime. You'll never have to worry about that. But then when it came to issue two, like Scott said, I didn't want to print up a whole bunch. So that's when I actually went the Kablam route when I was printing up issue two. And so Kablam is, look, it's a functional comic. It's good. Everybody but print nerds is going to love the quality, and most people don't give a shit that if you put a book on its side, it kind of bows out. Again, you know what I'm talking about, right? That without doing anything, mm-hmm. you could basically stick a pencil through like the hole that's created by the binding. Again, most people don't care about that. I can't stress that enough. And the best part about Kablam is I think that if you wanted to get one copy of something printed, and let's say you want like a color comic, I don't know, 24 pages, one copy. It's going to cost you like $7. Like, that is nothing. And if you ramp it up to like 50 copies, the cost plummets. So the neat thing about Kablam is, what I really like about them is that they don't deal with this quote nonsense where, like, if you want to go to Print Ninja, they're going to say, click here for a quote, and then you enter all your information, and then they're going to send you an email, and then you're going to be on their mailing list, and then their sales rep's going to contact you, and you're going to get a lot of attention. But if what you want is just a quick goddamn quote with no obligation, places like Kablam can really hook that up for you. With Kablam, you have the option of saving some money per copy by getting Kablam to advertise their own shit on the back. That's up to you. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to save a few bucks, you can get a Kablam ad. If you want to pay a few extra cents per copy or a few more cents per copy, you get a Pure Virgin cover with no ads that you get to do whatever you want with.
And you can go on Kablam. It's so if you just type in on Google Kablam printing, it's going to pop up. It's ka-blam.com. And so if you click comics, you just plug in numbers. So they'll give you a estimate right away. So you plug in 24 pages or 28 pages with cover or whatever, and you know how many copies you want, and it'll give you your total. So there's no one that you're talking to, and they're not trying to sell you on this, you know, on using them. It's just like, it's an automated teller. You give us the numbers, we'll tell you what we charge you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so again, in terms of people starting out, Kablam's great. You know, I do actually recommend Kablam, even though those 2 out of every 100 print nerds are probably going to get upset over it. But, you know, you're here to make comics, man. And so you could always save the fancier printers for when you want to drop more money on a single copy or a book. So that those are kind of like two. Yeah, go ahead.
I was like, I actually have a third one. Okay. So it's Comic Wells Spring. Have you ever heard of them?
I am familiar with the name, yeah.
So the site for that, it's GrecoPrinting-ComicsWellSpring, and that's GreKo printing, one word, GrecoPrinting-Comics with an X, Comix, Well, Well, Spring, all one word there, .com. So they're actually very affordable. I can't remember if they do the same quote thing as Kablam, but I found that they were very reasonably priced, and I went with them a few times, and I was happy with their printing job. I'm not a print junkie. I'm not, like, super into that. It's like, if the spine is nice, if there's no like, dings and ticks and creases when I get it, and the colors look like the colors, then I'm set, you know? It's just like, hey, everyone, here's the comic. Buy the comic, so.
Yeah, I mean, and in general, I'm here to buy comics and read comics and get things that I enjoy and, you know, maybe be part of the industry and support it, you know, and other artists as well. So, yeah, I sort of don't give a shit about the books that bow out. But, you know, I do want to give that acknowledgement that, you know, when you go to a comic shop, what you're going to see is books that are printed with a very tight binding, right? But conventions are different, mm-hmm. man. We're talking about people that are publishing themselves. We're talking about people that are hustling. Talking about people that care enough about their product to pay money for a table to get it in front of you, man. And so that's, you know, getting a comic out there is the important part, and it's sort of, you know, however you want to do it is great.
Yeah, and if you're going to be doing your printing through Kablam or Comics Well Spring, like, knowing that you're going to be paying, you know, maybe $4 an issue, $3.50 an issue, people that support indie comics, they know they're probably going to be paying a little bit more for an indie comic. And I think that's always been well known. I think even in the 90s, when people were charging $1.95 for a standard Image comic or Marvel comic, whatever, you could find indie books for $5 cover price, more than likely black and white. And it was just known. Like, yeah, that's how much indie comics cost because we're making them ourselves. So people that love them, we'll pay them.
Yeah. And if you want our thoughts on what you should charge for an indie comic, I suggest you go check out that episode. I was in. we had opinions. We had opinions there. So
yeah. So definitely had some strong opinions on that one.
So there's a third thing that we wanted to talk about, which is one that is going to require a little bit of legwork on your end, you being the person that's looking to get your comic printed, but it could end up being the most rewarding. and that is local printers. You would be surprised how many local printers out there are comfortable or willing and able to print up a book and print exactly your dimensions. All you got to do is give them the dimensions and they make it happen. And, you know, I would have said that anyway, but I specifically mentioned it because you print Second Shift and Wanderers and Melisandre through local printers, you know, and why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the first company I ever used was a San Diego-based company called MGX. I'm not sure if they're still under that or they changed their name since, but they're really great. I was working with them when they were a smaller company. I think since then they've changed their name, but they've grown as their business has grown, you know? And so the kind of like, I think he was a partner or one of the owners, he would hook it up. We both knew each other from our start, so he would kind of give me a hookup price. But over the years, you discover other printers who are local, and you might get a better deal. You might not need such a large print run. So unfortunately, like with them, to get the good price per unit rate, I would have to order 500. So unlike Keith, I didn't realize that I would be stuck with a shitload of issue 2, 3, 4, you know, and by 5, I learned my lesson. So, yeah, so learn from my mistake. Make sure you go to those smaller print runs on those random issues, because you will be stuck with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where you're going to just start having to clearance them out. You're going to be, you know, if you do kickstart your book, you have to try to think of it like this. If your Kickstarter is successful, more than likely, those books were paid for by your Kickstarter backers. So even though it cost you, let's say, $225 to print your issue, and you end up selling, you got to get rid of them. They're dead stock, essentially. Like they're just sitting in your closet, not doing shit. You can clearance them for a buck. So don't feel like you're losing $1.25 per issue, because that wasn't your $1.25. That was someone else's $1.25 that they gave you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but again, if you learn from my mistakes, you won't have to deal with this. So try to go through one of those other printers.
Yeah, but I also think a couple things here. One, it's fair to note that everybody does this, right? Like if you go into a Macy's, you're going to see clothes on the clearance rack. There's two ways of looking at that, right? One is, oh my God, this piece of clothing is on the clearance rack. I can't believe it. Well, another way of looking at it is they sold the full price ones already, man. They made their money. You know, it's out of season. For they're sure. ready to keep it turning, and they're ready to turn that dead inventory into some money so they can buy live inventory in the future. And that's how you can think about it too. You know, that money is made a long time ago. You know, again, whether you funded it yourself or whether you kickstarted it and you got some awesome backers that were willing to finance that print run in exchange for a cool piece of product, you're now in the spot where that stuff's paid for. So yes, I'm sure there's fancy accounting terms for what that is. It's probably like a book loss or something like that, but like who the hell cares? You're not a fancy accountant. You know, I mean, if you are, then
right.
then you're probably not making comics for a living. You're probably making comics in your spare time, and you're being a fancy accountant during the day. You know, but anyway, so yeah, man, I I'm down with that. And so there was another thing I wanted to mention. Oh, I wanted to mention something else about like the issue 2s, 3s, and 4s being independent. You know, at least okay, being independent and self-published is not really that different than being like an independent publisher or even quote unquote an indie, no matter what that indie is. Because, so let's say you're a creator that has gone to like a good solid indie company. And so like something we do at 215 is we give creators the option of buying as many books they want, as they want, at the price that we are getting from the printer. Right. So the creators get to get hooked up there. So if you're a creator that's out there hustling, which is, you know, every comic company's favorite type of creator, every comic company's least favorite type of creator is a prima donna that thinks the book's going to sell itself. It's very hard for a book to sell itself. You know what I mean? If a book sells itself, it's probably because that creator has spent the last 30 years having his books or her books not sell themselves. You know, so they've built up that cred to where the books actually just move, you know, with minimal effort. But, dude, it's very hard to figure out how many extra copies you want to get, you know? So if it's an issue 1, to, you know, the same rules apply, right? If you have the option of getting good priced issues and you're going through a company and they give you that option, you're working shows, buy a bunch of issue ones. But when you get to issue 2, 3, 4, 5 and so on and so on, man, you're really not going to need a whole lot of those when it's all said and done. Yeah, less and less and less, yeah, with each issue. Because they're not evergreen, to use the fancy term, right? Trade paperbacks are evergreen, and issue ones have a lot of duration, but anything else doesn't really have any staying power.
Yes, it's something I've done too, because I've been sold out of issue one for a long time. And so what I tell people is, you can pick up issue two. It reads like an issue one. Issue one is kind of like an introduction, but you can get just as much information by number two. But I do have the trade, so a lot of times I just refer to people that. I'm like, the trade has issue one in it, you get 5 issues for $15, it's a pretty good deal. People usually end up doing that. People love trades anyway. Yep. If they're not looking to invest $15 in an indie book they've never heard of, I refer them to issue 7, which is a one and done, it's a one shot. I'm like, you get introduced to the character, you get a great idea of who everyone is in the book and what type of book this is. Complete one and done. And so I've actually sold a shitload of issue 7. So it's for the majority of this podcast, we're talking about not doing the 2 through 4 or whatever the case is. But if you feel strongly about one of your issues, that it does stand on its own, and you don't have that issue one to peddle, you know, you can always push another issue. But you know, you're going to know your own product better than we will. So just bear that in mind when you're ordering these copies.
So I think we covered that. I hope that helped. And again, we're going to keep on brainstorming some things out there that can just be helpful resources for people that are looking to either get in the game or advance their position in the game, whatever it is. And if you pick up one thing, well, then we're happy about that. Can we talk about collecting comics, man?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of, let me pop this in here before we go on to that. I think I was supposed to mention this a couple of weeks ago, then I just completely spaced on doing it. It might have been one of our jam-packed episodes where we had so much stuff to talk about, we had to roll some stuff over. But someone hit me up on Facebook and bought 2 copies of issues 2 through 5. Like, he loved it so much, he ended up buying 2 copies of each, and he was looking for issue 1. And so that was super cool, and I let him know about the second printing coming, and he's like, please let me know when that comes in. And he was just super psyched about the book. So I don't know if I mentioned that before. If I did, I apologize. But it's always very cool to get some feedback like that, you know, like someone that's just basically kind of a Keith situation. He sold a lot of his collection, and so he got back into comics, and now he's hunting down his old collection. And so he was like, I'm looking just for quality books and my old collection. And he goes, and this is a quality book, so I really want to get that issue 1. So it's always rewarding to get feedback like that.
Word up. And you just took my segue and you segued the shit out of that, brother. Because Scott Scott knows information that the audience is about to find out, right? Which is, it's funny, right? Because there's part of me that wonders that if you listen to this podcast long enough, you'll think that I'm just an idiot, right? It's like I say shit, and then 3 episodes later, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing the exact opposite. You know what I mean? Like I'm like, trust me, I'm really not this stupid. It's more that like I have these thought evolutions. And it just kind of, all of a sudden, you find yourself in a different place, you know? And the me that I'm contradicting from a few episodes back is when we were talking about, I think we first started talking about Secret Wars. And then we started talking about, you know, the running joke on this podcast that, you know, oh, I had it, I sold it, it's gone, you know? And I think part of it is just, I'm at this place in my, you know, what are we going to call it? Like my luxury spending money game or life, you know, in my cycle. I don't have that much luxury spending money. I mean, you know, we got shit to pay for that's important, like rent and cars and utilities and all that stuff, right? But with the money that's left over, what I can feel is this gravitational pull. You know, I mean, listeners know that Scott and I have been going to a lot of comic shops and buying a lot of comics. But the one pool I have not swam in yet is when we talk about collectible comics. And I finally decided to jump back into that pool again. And what I'm doing is what Scott just mentioned. You know, like, why kick myself over not having Secret Wars 8 anymore? Why not just buy Secret Wars 8? If that's going to be my damn budget for the month, then so be it. It's going to be my budget for the month. But guess what's sitting over there, Scott? Right there. Secret Wars 8. Because it's back, baby.
Wow, that came in quick.
Yeah, yeah. Back, baby. That's all I got to say. You know, and...
That's awesome.
And this is one of those cases where, you know, people who collect comics can get it, you know, and... I think what people also are understanding is that you and I have you know, what would we say, addictive personalities, right? When in terms mm-hmm. of, like, you know, we don't just collect comics, we collect, you know. So and so that's kind of where I am right now. And more importantly, I think all of my collector stuff is kind of funneling into one place right now, which is comics. You know, I mean, I collect records, I collect various things, you know. I and it's always tended to be balanced, but what I can feel right now is the fact that comics are what are doing it for me. And you can go about it so many ways, you know, like my, without giving away, I'm not going to talk about what characters I'm interested in collecting, but what I am doing is I am basically going back to that formative period that I had in comics. And I'm just going to brainstorm a whole lot of things. I mean, some of them jumped right to my head. And I'm just going to start collecting the things I want to collect, right? Because there's a bunch of people out there that can just collect things that, like, they're just going to try to play the stock market, for lack of a better way to put it. They want to get the next hot thing before it's the next hot thing. That's not what I'm going for.
Yeah, speculators.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm going for here is getting back into the things that formed my... you know, writing brain, my thinking brain, my nerd brain, and really revisiting them. And I've been doing that with books for a while, because about a year ago, I'm pointing to the shelf behind me, you can't see, but I reacquired some of the Stephen King books that I had grown up with in the 80s. And it's fascinating, you know, because there are some times where I'm reading something and I'm like, wow, that's really similar to the way I think now. And while I don't remember any kind of influence there, something tells me that, like, it was always there in the background. You know, it was always this thing that was kind of forming and shaping me. So it really is fun as an adult to go back and consult those things.
Yeah, I find that happens to most people. So, for instance, so when I was younger, I used to write wrestling matches for my friends to perform on my trampoline. And so I started training in pro wrestling. I became a pro wrestler. I learned the formula of a wrestling match, as much like a writer learns the formula of a three-act structure. Wrestlers learn the seven steps of a pro wrestling match. And I, year or two after I had started training and wrestling, I went back and I actually found the scripts for those matches. And I actually knew psychology without knowing psychology of wrestling match. Mm-hmm. So I was like, holy shit. I, just by watching wrestling for so many years, it imprinted in my mind how to structure a match. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing happens when we take in our favorite writers, our favorite artists, you know, whatever the case is, your favorite entertainer, comedian, you might structure the way you talk because of a favorite actor. You watch that actor a lot. Like I say, buddy. I say, what's up, buddy? I say that a lot. And that's because I grew up watching Adam Sandler, and I realized it later in life. I was like, oh, I kind of say shit Adam Sandler says in movies. I don't know if he says that in real life, but that's how I talk sometimes, you know? And so it's just shit like that, you know. It's just like over time you just develop these habits and you don't even realize that you're doing it. And so you look back at it with fresh eyes and go, oh shit, I didn't realize I was doing that, but I was.
You know, who knows how the brain works, right? But it's just really fun to go back and take a look at that. And I wanted to mention one more thing, which is I mentioned Secret Wars 8. You know, there's a couple ways I could have gone about this. I could have just piecemealed and said, no, I want to go for, like, the inexpensive stuff and kind of nibble, right? And then work my way up to the big purchases. Or I could just start with the big purchases, the ones that I want, try to get a good deal on them, get them the hell out of the way, and then have fun exploring and nibbling and finding a comic here and there. And that's the way I felt that, just I observed myself and noticed that it was the one, like there were some that I just wanted to kind of deal with, and I'm going to save up the money for those and get them out of the way. And then that way I can have fun exploring and, again, going for a lot of these secondary, tertiary kind of books or the cheap books or whatever. I mean, you know, some books jumped into my head recently, like Arion, Lord of Atlantis was a book that I read when I was 14.
Oh, okay.
It was DC's. No, wait, was it? Yeah, I was going to say DC's answer to Aquaman, but Aquaman is DC. I can't even remember what the hell it was, but I'm going to find it somewhere and I'm going to look it up, and maybe it'll suck and I won't want to read it, but at least my brain is working with those things, you know? And so that's kind of where I want to go with it. You know, the expensive ones are the ones you think of, cause they're the ones you joked about, like, oh, I had that comic, but you know what? I don't need to joke about it anymore, cause I have the comic again. And sure, it cost me, but that's 20 years ago. That's 25 years ago. So, I mean, what am I supposed to do
about that? Yeah, the inflation on that stuff, it reminds me of a story that Rob Liefeld has told this story, and it's a great story. He said back in early Image days, he was walking the sales floor with Todd McFarlane, and he stops in his tracks, and he looks at this dealer's booth. He sees the Amazing Fantasy... the Spider-Man's first appearance. I think it was 16?
15?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think it's 15. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So Spider-Man's first appearance in Amazing Fantasy, he sees it. And he asked the dealer, how much you asking for that? And I think at the time, it was like $5,000. And Todd said, that's a great price. He's like, I'm really thinking about it. He's like, that's a really good price. That's a good price. And he told Rob, this will always be Spider-Man's first appearance. He goes, that will never change. He's like, $5,000 is nothing. After 15, 20 years, imagine how much that book's going to be.
Yeah.
And look at it now.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, it's just sage advice, sage wisdom right there. You know, it's just like you, if it's a character you care about, you know, if you want Secret Wars #8, because it's the first appearance of the Venom symbiote, it's always going to be the first appearance of the Venom symbiote. So
exactly,
you know, as long as that stays in relevance, then that book will always go up. So what you paid is well worth the price of admission.
Yep, and Spidey 252, the first appearance of the black costume, because I was reading comics back then. The black costume actually showed up before you could figure out why the hell he was wearing one. Just showed up. I think Spidey 252 was on newsstands a couple weeks, if not months, before Secret Wars 8 came out. I think it may have even beaten it by a substantial amount of months. So he had this black costume, and then later on you figure it out. So Spider-Man 252 is very high on my current kind of grail list, right? I hate overusing grail because there's only one and nobody could ever find
that's awesome.
And that's hardly a comic book that has a lot of copies in circulation. But yeah, man, it's fun. It's fun. So I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of jump back in and you know, not get carried away. Yeah.
Grail for me is anything that is on the top of your want list. Like for you, it's your grail. So that's okay. So like my grails were X-Men #1, obviously. Yeah. And then actually Invincible #1.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, at the time it was a $600 comic book and a modern comic at that. So that's a bitter pill to swallow. It's like, well, fuck, it's my favorite comic book of all time. Like, am I going to spend $600? My best friend shoots me $100 via PayPal. And he goes, happy birthday. Because I told him, I said, it's $600. I can't justify $600 on a comic book.
Yes.
If it was $500, I think I could do it. And then he sends me over $100. He said, happy birthday. Go buy the comic book. And,
nice.
And so I did. I ordered it right then and there. And I felt really good about it, and it's like a $3,000 comic book now. Yeah. So it was like, oh, right on, good move.
Yeah, you're actually, so I do have, so that's helpful. Yeah, I think I like that definition a lot of Holy Grail. I have a grail, and it's not anything I've talked about yet, and I'm not even going to mention it yet. I'll mention it when I get.
Oh yeah, because you don't want to jack up the price before you own it.
I might mention it to you when we stop recording. But in general, I'm not going to mention it. And then someday I'm going to mention, hey, I saved up and I finally decided to buy my grail. And then, of course, we know how this works. You buy that and something else becomes your grail. But
exactly right.
But for now, I know what my grail is, and someday I'll get it. So I'm looking forward to that, man, because I think part of the fun is having it there. Like, not just going out and going hog and buying all these things. You know what I mean? To have it there and to earn it. So the music's playing. And what you can do on Instagram is that you can find me at Keith_Decibel. That is writing and comics and all kinds of stuff and records. Something I've taken to recently, since I talk about reading comics with my morning coffee, is I take photos of those comics a lot. I'm not going to say I'm going to do it every day, but I take photos of those comics so people can see what I read this morning. And if it's something that looks interesting to you, even based on the cover, I encourage you to check it out. You can also find me at Kadoja Kaiju, one word, and that is all things Kadoja.
Yeah, and I do like looking at those pictures. I always enjoy those stories, and I'll make a comment and ask a question if I haven't read the book, or make a comment if I have, you know.
Yeah,
talk
for
a little
sure
bit about that.
I dig
so that's
that.
Always cool.
Yeah.
And you can find me at Scott Lost, ScottLost, on Twitter and Instagram, and Facebook.com/ScottLost.
Yep. As for websites, KeithRFoster.com is my blog site, and I also have KeithRFoster.com/Kadoja. And I have a few other sites that I'm trying to link to that, so I can talk about those in the future, but that's everything you need. Blog posts, Kadoja, a Kadoja store. Everything's there.
And you can find my books, Wanderers of Milisanta, Anthropomorphic Dinosaurs versus Humans, and Second Shift, The Tale of Minimum Wage Workers During the Day, Superheroes at Night, at accidentalaliens.com. I also do a lot of stories in the anthology series that I have up there, as well as Tales from the Mothership. I have stories in all of those books, so if you want to pick those up too, that would be awesome. We have digital and physical copies available. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, hit us up on makingcomicspodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the pod. Don't forget to give us a like, a subscribe, a review, all of that stuff. Leave us a star rating. That helps the algorithm. It helps other people find us. And that's what we want. We want people to find this podcast, and we want to keep giving it to you guys every week.
Man. All right. Well, we're going to call it a week, brother. Until next week, we'll see you guys.
Yeah.